Good evening, I'm Rafferty Cleary. Partly cloudy to clear skies tonight, a low near 75. Your forecast coming up in minutes. A motion accepting a new bid to purchase Cumberland River Hospital did not appear on Cookeville City Council's agenda Thursday. Mayor Ricky Shelton said Cookeville Regional Medical Center needs to finalize details with Salina Healthcare before council can take the next step.
There is some movement on that now, and so the hospital board will meet next week and do what they need to do first in relation to the bids that were received, and then that will be brought to the city council for some type of action. We brought to city council at the first August meeting.
CRMC's Board of Trustees voted last month to accept a $300,000 bid from Salina Healthcare to purchase Cumberland River Hospital. CRMC's Board of Trustees will meet next Thursday, July 25th, beginning at 6 p.m. A Cumberland County man will stand trial this fall after fatally shooting two people at a bus garage in 2018. Warren Nostrom facing two counts of first-degree murder following the deaths of his 58-year-old ex-wife, Joy, and 54-year-old Mark Gunter. Nostrom's trial, scheduled for October 29th at the Cumberland County Justice Center with a motion hearing set for September 6th. The trial will come nearly 9 months after a Cumberland County grand jury indicted Nostrom on murder charges. The shooting occurred last September when Nostrom drove to the Cumberland County school bus garage, shooting his ex-wife and Gunter before turning the gun on himself. A missing child from Putnam County has been found safe in Bowling Green, Kentucky. The TBI announcing Thursday evening 1-year-old Lachlan Capo was located. He was last seen Wednesday with Margaret Walker. No word on if any arrests were made. No one showed up for a public hearing Thursday for the possible closure of the Poplar Grove and Cornerstone voting precincts in Putnam County. The Election Commission will decide whether to close or keep open the polling locations during their August meeting. Cookeville City Council has passed the first reading of its new hotel-motel tax. City Manager James Mills reporting that tax expected to generate approximately $600,000 annually. The City of Sparta has received a $14,000 National Rotary Greenways grant. Sparta Mayor Jeff Young said the grant will pay for the construction of two entrance signs.
We're looking at several different types of layouts, whether it's brick or stone or fieldstone, whatever you might be, but the goal is to have some kind of big welcoming sign saying welcome to Sparta as you come into town, and we'll want to light it so it's noticeable day and night.
The grant will fund two welcome signs on the north and south of Sparta. Young said the city will continue discussions over design in the coming weeks. Progressive Savings Bank celebrated 10 years at their Cookeville location on Interstate Drive yesterday. Marilyn Molinick serves as Progressive Savings Community President.
We have been in Cookeville for 14 years, but we've been in this location for 10. And we're very community-minded. We love our customers and the community, so we're very good at giving back to the community.
Progressive Savings and its associated companies celebrated the milestone with a special reception and ribbon cutting along with county and city officials. The Interstate Drive building also houses Progressive Tax and Accounting, Cravens & Company Wealth Management, and the Raines Agency Insurance. 50 years ago this week, men from planet Earth stepped onto the moon for the first time. Among the 400,000 people working on the Apollo 11 project was Cookeville resident and Tennessee Tech University graduate Bristol Harris. Harris arrived at NASA in 1967, 13 months before Apollo 11 would land on the Sea of Tranquility. He spoke with me earlier today about his path to NASA and the part he played in helping man take steps on another world.
To get there, I think that your listeners should take some advice that I had to take an action to get there. That interview at Tech was great, but they said, we can't pay your way to come on site and interview because we just don't have the funds, and that's just not a government function. Now, all these other private companies are paying you, paying for engineers at this time in 1968 to fly to their site, all expenses paid. So I made an arrangement to go down to the Kennedy Space Center in December of 1967 and had an interview on site at my own expense. And I think that made an impression on them. They said they were thankful that I came down. I got the job offer. And so then in 1968, I graduated from Tech on June the 2nd And the next day, traveled 700 miles with my new wife, and she and I traveled down there and got down there and set up an efficiency. And 3 days later, I was 5 days after I graduated from Tech, I was working for NASA as an engineer.
Because at 9:32 a.m., 3 hours and 32 minutes from now, from here in Florida, the Merritt Island Launch Complex at the Kennedy Space Center near what we used to know as Cape Canaveral is now known as Cape Kennedy. Man is about to launch himself on a trip to the moon with the expectation of landing there.
I had a lot to learn, but by the time Apollo launched, there were four other launches that I'd worked on. So I was getting to be an experienced rocket scientist. After 13 months, I had Apollo 7, which was the first launch after the Apollo 1 fire where the three astronauts were killed on the pad. I wasn't there at that time. I was still at Tennessee Tech. But the people I worked with were, and that was a very tough time to get that first launch successful. Apollo 7, and then Apollo 8 went around the moon, Apollo 9, Apollo 10, and then we came up to Apollo 11. And now I was a very experienced instrumentation engineer. And that meant that there were 16,000 measurements on the third stage of the Saturn rocket that launched Apollo into space. And my job was to make sure that the readings of those 16,000 measurements were correct. They were calibrated correctly. They were working. And so all that the other engineers would receive that information and could check out their systems and make sure that it was ready, this rocket was ready for launch.
165 pounds, Purdue Aeronautical Engineer graduate of 55, two sons, Eric, 12, Mark, 6, test pilot of X-15s, a naval aviator, 78 combat missions in Korea. Now a civilian, the man who is to put his foot, man's first foot, on the moon next Monday morning.
T-minus 36 hours before launch during my 12 hours on there, it was the time that we went around for the last checkout, the last time we would be in the rocket. So 36 hours, that's the day before. So I went out there with the rest of the checkout crew, went up to the 300 and the foot level of the rocket in the elevator, and then went inside the rocket. And I walked around to check to see there was not any non-flight hardware that we had still there. Went around and went to the aft end, the back end of the rocket. My stage, this third stage, and then went to the forward end. At the forward end, the lunar module was sitting on top of that stage, and the legs were folded underneath it until they got into space, and then they would spring out. And I would go around, do my checks, and then I would go over to the ladder that the astronauts would climb down to the moon. And that first one especially, Apollo 11, I did it for all of them, but Apollo 11, there was a plaque on there, and in part it said, the last sentence was, "We come in peace for all mankind." And I just sort of stared at that plaque and just paused a little bit and just didn't want to ever forget that view. And then I would, to the ladder there, I tested it several different places to put my fingerprints on it. I don't know if they survived the vacuum of space, but I touched the ladder, put my fingerprints on it, and realized that was really something special. And then I walked out, and then we went out the door, and the crew, the technicians, then removed all the lighting and the work platforms that we were walking on, and then they sealed the door for the last time.
12, 11, 10, 9... Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
After launch, when the rocket clears the tower, then Houston, Mission Control, is in charge. And we have nothing to do with that launch anymore, officially, at Kennedy Space Center. So we've got it off the ground, and it's turned over to Mission Control. So everybody has been intensely working on it for a week, 12 hours on, 12 hours off, and so forth. We have to review some data. We reviewed the data from a launch that my instrumentation had produced. and reviewed it to make sure there was plenty of data there for review, and it was. And after that time, then I went home, and we'd been packing, and we were ready to come to Tennessee. So we got on the road to I-75, which wasn't all completed back in those days in 68, 69. You got sections of I-75, and you'd get off and you had to go through Dalton, Georgia, and you had to do this and everything. But we got to Cookeville, and there's no 111 also like that time. Roads, so we had to go through the mountain roads and got to Cookeville, and then we waited there two or three days and was with my parents and my wife and I, and we watched the landing of landing from Cookeville, Tennessee.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Harris worked at NASA for 26 years, taking part in the first 65 space shuttle flights. He now lives in Cookeville and is the founder of an educational technology company that designs and develops STEM lesson kits for students in grades 4 through 8.